Good morning. So last time we finished up talking about this idea of average memory access time. So we saw that this was sort of a way of determining the overall performance of our cache, where we were looking at the perspective of if I'm the processor loading and storing things, how fast are those loads and stores, sort of on average. And then we sort of examined our different ways of modifying our caches, and we could look at each of them as sort of trade-offs on different attributes of the cache, of the formula. So we had hit time, hit rate, and miss penalty, and we could say, you know, different changes we make to the cache would affect different parts of that formula. And this is how we could reason about, you know, whether it's worth having a larger cache or having more ways in our cache or something like that. We could reason about the effect on each of those parameters. Now, when we're talking about hit rate, we also have this issue that, well, there's different things we can do which will help with the hit rate, but they don't always help with the hit rate. And one thing that's helpful to know is, well, what kind of accesses is a program doing? And we can kind of categorize these accesses in these three categories. We have these compulsory misses. I should say, we've categorized the misses they have. So we have these compulsory misses. And this is misses which happen when a program is accessing some block for the first time. This is called a compulsory miss because, well, with our simple cache design, we can't actually have that in the cache. It has to be a miss because there's no way of knowing the program is going to access it. Now, we learned that that's not actually something which has to be a miss, because we can avoid these misses by doing things like prefetching. We can predict what the program's going to access, and real processors do this when there's a nice pattern they can look for. And it's really worth doing, and it's actually not too complicated. You also mentioned this idea of conflict misses. So sometimes we have these misses when, if we look at our cache, well, there's really not that much being stored in it, and yet we still have misses, even though it seems like there should be room. And a sort of way of making this sort of more formal is we could say there are misses which would go away if we just had the same size cache but more ways. And we call these conflict misses. And our third category is capacity misses. These are misses that would not go away if we just had more ways. These are things where, if we want to make them go away, probably what we should do is make our cache bigger. Or we should do something like, you know, that effectively increases its capacity, like if our blocks are too big, making them smaller to have more things that we can put in the cache. So after talking about sort of categorizing misses and looking at the different aspects of our average memory access time formula, we started looking at, well, when I'm writing programs, what kind of cache misses should I expect? How can I predict what cache misses there are? And we looked at sort of correlating this to like C code we might write and what the cache misses would be. Good counting of that, and we're going to do more of that today, moving to eventually trying to make this into something where we can give you something that's practical to use to actually write code that has better cache behavior. And something we can do at the software side of things to improve our cache performance. Okay, so questions about things we covered last time? Okay, so last time we had this exercise where we learned that there were 256 data cache misses. And there's a couple ways we can view this problem. So one is that our cache blocks, you know, assuming the array starts aligned with a cache block, we have array element 0, 1, 2, 3. This is the first cache block, then 4, 5, 6, 7, and so on. And we're going to read in 0 through 3 when we access array of 0, because we have to read in a whole cache block. So our pattern is sort of going to be a miss, which reads in 0 through 3, and then 3 hits, because we access 0, 1, 2, because this is incrementing by 2, 3, and so on. And that ends up repeating until we get to the end of the cache. And actually, it didn't even matter that this is a 2 kilobyte cache, because the only time we actually access something, some block a second time, is immediately after we just accessed it. So, you know, we'd have the same behavior if this was a 1 set cache for this case. And it's 256, 1024 divided by 4, and every fourth access is going to be this. Another way we could have solved this is we could say, oh, so if we say that 0 through 3 maps to set 0, then with this 2 kilobyte cache, we're going to have 128 sets, which is going to be, that's because that's 2 kilobytes divided by 16 bytes, and it's direct map, so there's one way for sets, so I just counted the blocks. And set 0, if that includes 0 through 3, then when we get all the way down to set 127, the last set, that's going to be 511, just before halfway through our 4 kilobyte array. Another way we can think about this is that if we can think of filling up our 2 kilobyte cache and we start at the top and keep adding more stuff, we're going to run out of stuff halfway through this array and have to go back to the beginning. And so indexes starting with 512 are going to be in set 0. So it turns out that set 0 has 0 through 3 indexes in the array and 512 through 515. And if we look at our access pattern for set 0, we access 0, brings in 0 through 3, we have 3 hits after that. Then we access 512, which evicts 0, and we have 3 hits after that. And if we try to do this analysis for set 1, we'll find out that it's symmetric, that all the sets have 2 things that we access that map to them, that we access in the same pattern. So we can just say, okay, we're going to repeat that 128 times. Because it's just how the numbers work out, there's no exceptions. Okay, some questions? Let me figure that out. Okay, so let's do this variation here, where now we're going to have to worry about the size of our cache. That trick of just saying, yeah, we're only accessing the block immediately after is not going to work. So we have two parts of the question. So the first is, how many misses are we going to have with the 2 kilobyte direct map cache? And the second, perhaps a little trickier part, is if I make this a set associative cache, so I keep the same size, but I basically reduce the number of sets and add ways to compensate to have the same size, like, would that do better? Could I fix this problem? Fix, or at least lower the number of misses by doing that. And I guess to avoid making this question extra complicated, we'll assume array starts at the beginning of a cache block, so its address is a multiple of 16. Would like some more time? Okay, give me help. I did my first thing I would do to start this question is like figure out, you know, how this parts of the array would map to sets. And I just arbitrarily said, we'll assume it starts at set 0. It might not, but we can just assume the sets are renumbered and get the same answer if it doesn't. So let's start with the first question here. So how many caches is this? So who thinks we have, so we in the previous question, we had 256 cache misses. So who thinks we have less than we used to have? Thinks we have the same number? Okay. Who thinks we have, let's say twice as many, 512? Okay. Thinks we have four times as many? People thinks we have some other number. Okay, so plurality of answers are twice as many, and that's what I get. So twice as many, which is 512. So what happens here? So one way we can view this is we can say, we can look at just what happens to one of the sets. So I'll choose the set which contains index 0. I'll call that set 0, even though it might have a different index in practice, but the reasoning will still work out the same way if it had a different index. So that's going to contain 0, and we assume that's at the beginning of a cache block. It contains, the block is 0, 1, 2, and 3. So when we access array of 0, that's going to read in 0, 1, 2, and 3. And also, it's going to contain 512. So why is it going to contain 512? So one way I can figure that out is that that's 2 kilobytes apart, and that's how far we have to go before we wrap around in this cache. That if we kind of think of filling up a column of the cache, we're going to go have 2 kilobytes of stuff before we get back to the top, because the column can fit 2 kilobytes. And that gets us to 512. So if we think of this first loop here, we're going to access 0, to then we're going to have a bunch of iterations which don't do anything with set 0. And then we're going to access 512 and 514. And we think of the second loop, we're going to access 1 and 3. Then we're going to have a bunch of iterations that don't do anything with set 0. And then we're going to access 513 and 515. And since this is a direct map cache, we can only hold one thing in this set. This is one row of the cache we're talking about the behavior of. And what's going to happen is we're going to read in 0. That's going to be a miss. We're going to read in 2. Well, that's going to be a hit. We're going to get it from just what the block we just read in. We're going to read in 512. That's going to be a miss. We're going to read in 514. Well, that's a hit. We just read that block in. It's part of the block. Then we're going to try to read 1. And, well, we accessed 1 before, so it could have been in our cache. But, unfortunately, only one thing fits in this set, and that's just going to be the last thing we put in it. And the last thing you put in it is the block containing 512. So that's going to be another miss, followed by a hit, because 3 is going to be in the same block as 1. We're going to read in that block. Then we're going to read in 513. This is another case where, well, you know, we did read in that block containing 513 because 512 is in the same block. Unfortunately, we can only store one thing in this set, and the thing you just put in it is 0 through 3, which is not 512 through 515. So that's going to be another miss followed by a hit. So every sort of other access to this set ends up being a miss. And all the other sets are going to behave the same way, because we can see that when we think of the whole array, even when we get to set 127, the highest numbered set in our cache, you know, this still has two different things we're accessing. So things would be different if, let's say, instead of the array having 1,024 elements, it had 1,000, right? In that case, when we got to the end, we'd have some places where we didn't have this problem of having another thing being accessed, because there'd only be one thing in the array which mapped to that set. But unfortunately, this, you know, our array is exactly big enough to have this problem for every single set. Some questions how to come up with that answer? Okay, so let's start do the second part of this question. Would a set associative cache do better? So anyone have an answer for whether if we keep the same size, so it's still 2 kilobytes, but make it like 2-way or 4-way or 128-way, do we expect better behavior? So your observation is if we had more ways, we'd have the flexibility to store both 0 and 512. So we could do that. Now, something we need to think about here is, will our replacement policy actually do that? And certainly, we could come up with a replacement policy which would. So we could do better. Now, let's think about the typical replacement policies we try to choose, though. So what would happen with an LRU replacement policy? So in what happens with an LRU replacement policy if we... So let's think of the most extreme situation, a fully associative cache with an LRU replacement policy. How much is that going to improve, or is it not going to be better? So let's think of a fully associative cache. So this means we have one row, and we're just using LRU to decide what stays in. And let's think of the situation where we get to accessing array of one. So in that case, for that block containing 0 to 3 to be in the cache, that block must be one of the one of the 128 most recently used blocks before we do that. So what were the 128 most recently used blocks? Well, if we're at the beginning of this second loop here, we need to look at how this last loop ended. And what were the last things we accessed? Well, it was 1024, 1023, and so on. It's all the last 128 blocks are all from the second half of the array. And that means the least recently used policy for this fully associative cache is not actually going to keep what we want. It's not actually going to keep that 0 through 3 in there. So we're still going to have misses. And you might say, okay, so what about the 512? Can we avoid those misses? Well, when we get to accessing 512 in the second loop, the most recently accessed things are the first half of the array. And that means that we're going to not have kept the 512 in there because that's not in the first half. It's not going to be any of the 128 most recently used blocks. So it turns out a fully associative cache with an LRU policy would not do better. There's another replacement policy we could choose which would do better. But the LRU policy does precisely the wrong thing. And it turns out we come to the same conclusion if we have some associativity in between. Because it's always going to be the case that we're going to have several things that map to the same set, and you know they're going to be from different parts of the array. And when we're accessing the beginning of the array, it's always the case that we have these more recent accesses to the later part of the array that maps to that set. So the answer, will an associative cache do better, would be no if LRU, maybe yes otherwise. Maybe yes with a different replacement policy. Questions, how I came up with that answer? Yeah?
How can you use how it matters with the replacement
policy? So your question is, why does it matter what the replacement policy is? So let me give you a replacement policy that would do better with our fully associative cache. So that replacement policy I'm going to choose is I always replace the thing with the highest address. So that's obviously a stupid replacement policy for real programs, but that's going to keep the bottom half of the array in the cache, and that's going to give us more hits because we're not the second time we access the bottom half of the array, we're going to have most of it still in the cache. Does that answer your question? Yeah, so I can choose a replacement policy. It's just the problem is that the replacement policy I decide what to choose don't seem great for other programs. And maybe I could construct one which does okay for other programs, and probably some processors have actually tried this, but you know, the typical locality notion doesn't work. Well, partly because we actually have very bad locality in this program. Does that answer your question? Other questions? So set associative is not bad. So we've figured out how to do sort of analysis of cache misses for programs, and we're dealing with like actually very simple programs, and we'd actually like to like do this for something more realistic. And this is very tedious to like do this precise cache missing counting. And like it requires knowing exactly what the caches are. We'd really like to do something, you know, more practical. So I'm going to talk about sort of getting approximations of how many misses there are. And sort of our notion for this is going to be looking at locality, because we know the cache is trying to take advantage of locality. So we're basically going to look at if we have some sort of loop or something like that, do we have good or bad spatial and temporal locality? And when we have sort of nested loops, we're going to try to think about the most inner loop, the one that runs the most, and what the behavior is that of that is like, and whether everything that loop uses can fit into cache. And we're going to kind of use these ideas, checking the spatial locality, the temporal locality in a loop, and checking whether everything can or can't fit in the cache to get rough approximations of the number of misses. So in doing this, we're going to ignore things like do two things happen to accidentally map to the same set in a bad way or not. We're not going to look at that. So let's start with temporal and spatial locality. So here have two versions of the same code. They compute the same thing because addition is commutative. And my question is, you know, which has better temporal locality in A, B, and C, and which has better spatial locality in A, B, and C? In A, I mean, for the accesses to A. So, let's start with just A and temporal locality. So who thinks version 1 has better temporal locality for A? Okay. Thinks version 2 has better temporal locality for A. Okay. And no clue. Okay, so in between. So someone want to defend an answer for A's temporal locality. So what I'd like to look at is, what are our accesses to A going to look like? And if we think of this first version, the accesses to A, we're going to access A0, 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 when I equals 0, and this n times. And then when I equals 1, we're going to access A1, A1, A1. So on, then when I equals 2, we're going to access A2, 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 and so on. Because we're accessing A of I, but the inner loop is J, so we're doing that n times, each time for each value of I. In this second version, we're going to, when J equals 0, we're going to access A0, A1, and so on. When J equals 1, we're going to access A0, A1, and so on, and that for every possible value of J. And that's what I want to look at for figuring out, do I have good spatial or temporal locality for the accesses to A? So those are the accesses to A. I've written down where they are in A. And my question is, we're starting with temporal locality, does it have good temporal locality? So let's see if people have, we didn't have a clue, have made up a mind, or people have changed their answer. So who thinks we have good temporal locality for version 1? Better temporal locality for version 1? Better temporal locality for version 2? Okay, so we have pretty good consensus now that we have good temporal locality for version 1. And the reason why is, well, we keep accessing the same thing over and over again. Yes. We don't always do that, because between iterations of the loop, we change. But generally, the idea that if I see you accessing A of X, you're likely to access A of X next, it's a great guess. Like, it's good. It's true very, very often. So for A, for temporal, it's version 1. So spatial locality is a little weird here. So one thing you could, so if we think of spatial locality as, you know, are we accessing something nearby? You might say, oh, well, version one's the most nearby we can get. And I wouldn't fault you for that because we haven't defined spatial locality precisely enough. For version two, like you might say, oh, maybe that's better because we always access the next thing. We always access something nearby, but not exactly the same. I would say the spatial localities, you know, probably comparable in both, or spatial is good in both, you know, very good in both. Because if we want to predict what's the next element of A we're going to access, it's always next to the one we just accessed. Right. So spatial locality works very well. Like, when we think of our cache blocks, it's very likely the next part of A we access is the same cache block we're already loading. Okay, so let's do B. So who thinks version one has better temporal locality for B? How about version two? Okay. So we have B is just the opposite of A, and I would say the same thing applies to its spatial locality. It's very good in both. We haven't defined spatial locality precisely enough to know how to deal with accessing the same thing over and over and nothing else. Okay, now let's talk about C. So which one has, we'll start with temporal locality. So who thinks version one has better temporal locality for C? Version two. Something else. Anyone want to volunteer what your something else is? Yeah.
It's not really accessing the same thing.
It's not accessing the same thing over and over again, is your point. And we can see that because since I is always less than N, the possible values of I times N plus J are always distinct for every single I and J. Since J is always less than N. So since J ranges from 0 to N minus 1, these always give us different numbers. We never actually access the same element of C twice. So there is no real temporal locality, you know, none in either version. How about spatial locality? So who thinks version one has better spatial locality for C? Okay. Version two has better spatial locality for C. Okay. No clue. So let's talk about doing the same analysis I did for A for C. So if we think of our first version here, when I equals 0, we're accessing C of 0, C of 1, C of 2, all the way up to C of N minus 1. When I equals 1, we're accessing C of N, C of N plus 1, C of N plus 2, and so on. When I equals 2, I'm accessing C of N times 2, C of N times 2 plus 1, N times 2 plus 3, 2 plus 3 plus 4, and so on. So in version 1, all the accesses to C in that innermost loop, I'm accessing something right after each other. It also turns out that they're nearby between the iterations of the loop, but the most important thing is that we have these N iterations of the loop, presumably N's pretty big. They're all right next to each other, so that's pretty good. If we think of what happens for the version 2, when J equals 0, we're accessing C of 0, then C of N, C of N times 2, C of N times 3, and so on. And when J equals 1, we're accessing C of 1, C of N plus 1, C of n times 2 plus 1, and so on. So in version 2, typically, if we're accessing an element of C, the next element we're accessing is n elements away. And n is bigger than 1, if this loop runs at all, probably a lot bigger than 1. So the spatial locality is better in version 1 for C. So questions? Figured this out? Yes. Can I go over why A and B have good spatial locality in both? So if we look at this first version here for A, if I see us accessing A of 0, the next thing in A I'm going to access is A of 1. That's right next to it. So I will be able to take advantage of getting the whole cache block. If I look at this other version, if I see I'm accessing A of 0, the next thing I'm going to access is A of 1 because of the loop over I again. So I will be able to take advantage of having that whole cache block. So I think that's, but we couldn't ask for really better as far as, you know, taking advantage of things being nearby in the array A and the same for B. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so for the first like loop, usually you have to wait through like for J iterate through all of it, like it'd still be good spatial locality.
Question, for the first loop it'd still be good spatial locality even though we have to wait for the loop to iterate through. So this is, I didn't give a precise answer because we didn't define spatial locality precisely enough to like say what it does about we're accessing the exact same thing over and over again. And I don't think people in the literature actually define it well enough to do that either. So I'm kind of glossing over handling that case. But when we do access different elements of A and B, it does obey our spatial locality property. Does that answer your question? Okay, so we have this sort of locality analysis, and we can use this to get very rough estimates of the number of cache misses. So let's assume that our array n is very large. And what that's going to mean is that we don't have to worry about like keeping all of the array A in the cache. Because if n is large, then or keeping all of any of these arrays in the cache. If n is large, then if I access B of J and don't access that again soon, well, you know, if we have n elements of B, we're not going to keep all n elements of B in the cache. And what I can say for this is here, I know A has bad temporal locality, but good spatial locality. And from the bad temporal locality, I can conclude that usually I'm going to have a miss unless I've accessed something nearby, unless I have spatial locality to help me. And I have good spatial locality, so I can say that when things are randomly in the same block that I'm accessing, I should have a hit. And when are things going to be in the same block? Well, if our blocks hold 4 array elements, about 3/4 of the time. So my rough estimate would be that every access to A is going to be a miss, except if the previous access was in the same block, and because we have great spatial locality for A, that's about 3/4 of the time. And that gives me N over 4 misses for the accesses to A. And this is just another version of our analysis we had for cache misses. Here it turns out, right, where we said, oh, we're accessing the same block over and over again, we expect every time we access a new block that to be a miss. We're just applying that same idea here, saying, oh, about 1/4 of the time we're going to access a new block, so 1/4 of them will be misses. Otherwise, it's in the same block, so they won't be. So we get that n over 4 number. Now, this is an estimate because, well, you know, I'm not taking into account all the details of whether maybe we access A twice and it doesn't get evicted from the cache just because the sets work out in a particular way, but I'm making a very rough estimate. But this is a much more practical estimate to make because I don't need to like figure out do A and B and C conflict in the cache and all that stuff that we could do, but it's a lot of work and it depends on the cache details in a lot of ways. So questions how I sort of got this idea that we expect N over 4 misses for A. Sort of as a rough estimate. Okay. So let's do the same thing for B and C. Let's estimate the number of cache misses we expect. I guess, oh, I said things wrong. A here has great temporal locality too, but we have to load each element of A, each block once. That's sort of our intuition. If we're accessing A of 0, then A of 1, A of 2, A of 3, you know, and we expect, you know, every time we have to load a new thing, access a new A for the first time, a quarter of the time it's a miss. And 3/4 of the time it's in the same block as the previous thing in A we accessed recently, so it's going to be A. So I want to do the same analysis for B and C. Want to give me an estimate for either B or C or choice? Or the start of how we figure that out? Who would like more time? Okay, a bunch of people want more time. Okay. So what we're looking at for A is we said, okay, we eliminated some misses. We said some things wouldn't be misses because of temporal locality. And for the others, we said, would it be in the same block as something we just accessed? And we said, oh, about 3/4 of the time. That's how we got our estimates. So we want to try to apply the same thing to B and C. question? How's the size of the array compared to the size of the cache? So one of the assumptions I'm making here is that n is very large. So let's just assume n is big enough that it kind of dominates the cache. So indeed, if it isn't, then this gets a lot more complicated. So that's one of the ways we're making this fast and approximate, is we're assuming n is going to be big enough that we don't have to worry about that, the issue of things like almost fitting or something like that. So I'm going to start by looking at B. So the accesses to B do B of 0, B of 1, B of 2, B of 3, all the way up to B of n, and B of 0, B of 1, B of 2, B of 3, all the way up to B of n. So the first thing we want to check is, are we going to have hits because of temporal locality? And the answer is going to be no, because if we think of how our accesses work, when we've accessed B of 0 the second time, we've had a lot of other accesses to B that probably are going to mean our cache is not still going to be holding B of 0, because our cache keeps things that were recently accessed, and it's not one of the recently accessed things. Then we have to worry about spatial locality. So our question is, how often will it be the case that when we access an element of B, we've recently accessed something that's in the same block? And the answer is going to be, well, since we're accessing sequentially, the question is the previous index of B in the same block? And that's going to be true 3/4 of the time, because 4 things fit in the block. It depends how the blocks lay out exactly, but about 3/4 of the time, they're going to be in the same block. Well, exactly 3/4 and 1/4 of the time, they're not going to be in the same block, because, well, we can only fit 4 things in the block. So that means that we're going to have n squared cases where we don't have temporal locality, and 3/4 of them are going to be hits from being in the same block, 1/4 is not. So my estimate would be n squared over 4. Or alternately, what I'm saying is every time we access one of the n squared elements of B, we have a miss 1/4 of the time. Because 3/4 of the time we have the hit from being in the same block. For A, the way things worked is every time I accessed an element of A, I had a hit most of the time. So like all but n of the time, n times from accessing the same element of A just before. And of those n times, all but n over 4 of them from accessing something in the same block just before. So questions how I came up with that estimate? Yeah. And I guess the good question of like how does n compare to the size of the cache? If n wasn't very large compared to the size of the cache, we would need to say, wait a moment, could B of 0 still be in the cache the second time we access it? That would be a very important question. But if we're assuming n's very large, we're assuming that won't happen. But indeed, if n was not very large, if n was like almost the size of the cache, then we'd really have to worry about that happening. Okay. How about C? We have estimates for C. Yeah.
I would say maybe n, if it's very large, then
so your estimate for C is n. So let's first start out, how many accesses to C are there? How many times do we access C? What's our maximum possible? N squared, okay. And so you're saying n, or do you want to revise that with the number of accesses?
Oh, yeah, so in the
Okay, so you're saying n squared, you're saying every axis should be a miss. So, okay, any other? Yes, yeah. So you're saying, oh, yeah, yes, C is really big, and yes, we aren't accessing anything twice, but we are accessing blocks twice. Because if we think of our two accesses, we're accessing C of 0, then C of 1, then C of 2, then C of 3, and so on. So we're going to have the same thing as we had for B, that about 3/4 of the time, those two consecutive accesses will be in the same block, so only 1/4 of those n squared accesses are likely to be misses, approximately. So we can, in fact, get the same estimate. But I like the intuition that, oh, we're not accessing C over and over again, so we need to like think of most of the accesses are probably misses. Turns out, not most, because blocks are really, spatial locality is really nice. Like, it's surprisingly useful for avoiding misses. But it's not certainly nothing like a situation. So questions on how I came up with these estimates? Yeah? Question, why is B n squared over 4 instead of n over 4? So the total number of accesses to B is n squared. Question, if n is very large, we can store the B array inside the cache. So n being very large means that our cache is not very large, so it shouldn't have n things, n slots to store it. That's what I meant by the assumption of n very large, is that very large relative to our cache. This is an approximation, so I wasn't explicit about it, but you know, because I do know, yes, some caches are also very large, but we're assuming n is very large relative to the cache. Other questions? Okay, so now that we have sort of this approximate way of thinking about cache misses in loops and so on, we're going to look at applying this to sort of an example problem. And the problem we're going to use is going to deal with matrices. I'm going to represent our matrices as an array. So rather than writing a 2D array lookup, I'm going to do 2D array lookup of I, comma j. I'm going to do I times n plus j, which is just sort of explicitly computing where things are in the sort of the flattened version of that. I'm going to do this for two reasons. So one reason is that this is kind of what you have to do in C code, because you can't make a real dynamic array in C very easily. Dynamic 2D array in C very easily. And also because it's going to make it a lot clearer when we have spatial locality and when we don't. And I'm going to call the first index rows and the second index columns. I'm going to call I rows and j columns when I'm talking about matrices. Yes, you don't have to store them that way. Just going to choose a convention. And if we think of how our matrix maps to caches, let's say I have a 5 by 5 array and 4-element cache blocks. So you might say, gosh, this doesn't like map evenly to cache blocks, right? Our different rows are going to start at different places. But if this is our first cache block, let's say it starts at the beginning of the array, well, it holds most of a row. Our second cache block, you might say, you know, that's kind of mixed up. But it holds things mostly from one row. Our third cache block is kind of split between two rows, but even though our cache blocks are kind of mixed up between different rows here, if we want to take advantage of spatial locality, the way we're going to do that, even on this small example, is by reusing rows. Right, that's where our spatial locality is, because our rows are stored together. And that's even true when the rows don't map exactly nicely to cache blocks. And we're going to talk about the problem of matrix multiply, because this is a very well-studied problem and sort of illustrates ways we can dramatically improve program performance by paying attention to how caches work. And so here's the code for matrix multiply. Basically, for every I and j, we compute for, we do for every k, so this is like a, the naive version of this is a triply nested loop. We do a of I comma k times b of k comma j for two matrices a and b to compute our result c of I comma j. We sum all those together. All those together for all k. That's what we're computing. And since addition is commutative, there's multiple ways we can do this. So I wrote this where I'm going through all I, all j, and then all k. We could also do this version. So we have this choice here, and this choice matters. Because if we look at this, well, in this first version, where we keep accessing, we have good temporal locality in C. Because we keep accessing the same element of C over and over again. In the second version, we don't have good temporal locality in C. We're just accessing an element of C once and then moving on to the rest of the row. In this first version, I have good spatial locality in A. You know, once I access an element of A, I'm going to access the rest of that row, I have accessing this together. And if I look at B, I have really bad spatial locality. I'm skipping by n every time because k is the innermost loop. So k, I'm going to do k equals 0, k equals 1, k equals 2. I'm going to advance by n every time. So I have really bad spatial locality in B. In our second version, I have don't have temporal locality in C anymore, but I have but I have temporal locality in A now because as j changes, I'm accessing the same part of A. And now I have spatial locality in B because I'm advancing J, so I'm going from B of 0, B of 1, B of 2, and so on. And even though I lost my temporal locality in C, I still have spatial locality in C. Okay, so I have two different versions here. For my locality. So we can do, I probably should have presented this as an exercise. We can do this, fill this out. So which, what do we have? So we can try to figure out which should be better based on this. So we find out for accesses to C, so which version has better spatial locality? Who thinks the first one? Second one? About the same? Okay, for C. So, question? Or no? Okay, so for version C, so I would say that the spatial locality, this is sort of both very good. Spatial. So C, spatial, is both very good. How about temporal? Who think the first one has better temporal locality? Okay. Second one, about the same. So most people said the first one, the temporal, I would say version one. And that's because if we think of how this changes as we change k, it doesn't. So we're accessing the same element of C over and over. Okay. How about B? So who thinks, let's do spatial locality. Who thinks the first one has better spatial locality? Second one, about the same. Second one better spatial locality for C. About the same. So we have some split. So let's think of our axes to B for spatial locality. So in this first version, we're accessing B of 0, B of n, B of n times 2, up to B of n times n minus 1. And then we're accessing B of 1, B of 2, B of n plus 1, B of n times 2 plus 1, and so on. So this looks pretty bad, but we have to compare. Let's think of our second version. So in our second version, we're accessing B of 0, B of 1, B of 2, B of 3, up to B of n, and then we're accessing B of n minus 1, I should say, B of 0, B of 1, because we're going to advance I, which doesn't change anything. And then eventually we're going to go to B of n, and so on. So I would say the spatial locality seems a lot better in version 2, because all our axes are, most of our axes are next to each other. Not all of them, because we go to from B of n minus 1 to B of 0, but most of them are next to each other. How about for temporal locality? For B. Who thinks we have better temporal locality in version 1? Version 2, about the same. Okay, so we have kind of a split between version 2 and about the same. So I would say it's better in version 2, but it's very marginal because n is big. So I'll say kinda 2, but just kinda. And how about A? So how about spatial locality in A? Who thinks it's better in version 1? Better in version 2? About the same? No clue? Just lots of no opinion. Okay, so for our spatial locality, for version 1, we're advancing A of 0, A of 1, because K is what changes. For version 2, we're doing the same thing, and then I changes. So I would say this is probably better in version 1, but it's kind of debatable what we do about accessing the same thing over and over again. For temporal locality, who thinks it's better in version 1? Better in version 2? About the same? Okay, we have a split here. So for version 1, we never access the same element of A again until we advance J. So it takes n times for us to access the same element of A. For version 2, same thing is true, but we advance J every iteration. So it's a lot better in 2. So what we see here actually is, if we look at sort of our overall analysis, we've kind of found out that except for temporal locality in C, that it seems like version 2 has a big advantage, right? If we look at all the locality overall. And another way we can visualize this is we can say that in our version 1 here, which is I label as the IJK order, you know, we're kind of saying that the loop over K, what we're doing is we're accessing this row of A, this column of B, and this single element of C. And if we think of how this maps to our cache, well, we're going to have some reuse of this row of the cache of A. We're going to have something really bad going on with what we do with the cache for B, where we're loading these things and using just this little slice of them. And yeah, we're getting some good use out of C, but that's about it. if we think of the other order, you know, what we're doing, loading into the cache, is that, well, we're doing a row of B and a row of C, and so that's actually going to be a lot better about taking advantage of the cache in that innermost loop. So if we're looking just at the innermost loop, which is usually where I'd start this analysis, like this idea of how we're using the cache, it looks like we're getting a lot better use out of every block we load into the cache versus our other scenario. If we think of the blocks we load into the cache, we're loading a lot of blocks into the cache and not doing very much with them. We're not accessing them over and over again, and we're just using little pieces of them. We're not making very efficient use of the data we load into our cache. So it kind of looks like things are less efficient in that way. And we can also sort of look at like the two innermost loops together. And if we think of how the second version does with that, like we have, you know, things don't look great for C, which might be why you say that doesn't work out, but at least we have, you know, sort of lots of reuse of B, right, in that idea. We think of, for B, we're doing just a row of B in the two innermost loops, so we hopefully can at least cache that, even though we can't cache the stuff in C or the stuff in A very well. Or we could maybe cache that if N is not too big, I should say. Okay, so I've told you that we determined here that the locality overall, I said, it looked better in version 2 here. Is that actually true? And the answer is yes. So if you run both of these versions of the code on my desktop, even though they use the same number of instructions, the exact same number of instructions, the second version with the K in the outermost loop takes about half the cycles. Also, the version with the innermost loop has these weird speaks at powers of 2. Anyone have an idea of why would that happen? We have those peaks at powers of 2. Where it gets slower. That's a power of 2 size for our matrix. Yeah? Sorry? Question, we just miss all the array? So why isn't that happening for the other sizes nearby? Because the LRU, not exactly. So, not quite. So we are having a lot of extra misses, but the question is why is that happening for power suit? Yeah, back there?
Something to do with the way the multiplication works, that it's hitting the same part of the cache every time?
Question, something to do with the way the multiplication works hits the same part of the cache every time? Yeah, so if we have a power of 2, those things are gonna have the same lower bits of their address. And that's gonna include the index bits. So they're going to hit the same set of the cache. So we'll end up using one set of the cache a lot more than others. So these peaks are extra conflict misses from having everything mapped to the same set. Okay. So to do this is sort of temporal locality analysis. We could have actually done this estimate by doing our sort of miscounting idea. So for version 1, if I count my misses here, if n is really large, for A, I have accesses to n cubed accesses to A, and we learned that we have good spatial locality in A, so usually they're in the same block, so I have about n cubed divided by block size counting in array elements, misses to A. For B, I have no real locality, so every axis is likely to be a miss if n is big enough, so I have n cubed misses. And for C, well, I'm accessing the same thing of element of C in the innermost loop, so I'm going to have at most one miss for that innermost loop. And that's only going to be a miss if I didn't access it the same block in the previous loop, so that's n squared, number of those innermost loops divided by block size. Questions how we used our misestimating to get these estimates here? So we can do the same analysis for the alternate order. And say, okay, how many misses do we have for A here? Well, if we think of A, we need to load a new element of A every time we have a new loop over J, but we're accessing the same thing for J, so that's about n squared. Why is it a new element? Well, because when we advance I, we have no spatial locality. It's not likely to be in the same block as the previous thing in A we accessed. For B, well, for every loop over J, we need to load a new thing, but it's likely to be in the same block as the thing before, so I have n divided by block size per J loop, or n cubed divided by block size for the number of total misses, and the same thing for C. So questions on how I came up with these estimates here? So if we do sort of our estimation here, we say that in total I have n to the third plus n to the third divided by block size plus n squared misses, which is, you know, about n to the third. And here I have n squared plus n to the third divided by block size plus n to the third divided by block size, which is about 2 n to the third divided by block size. And we can say, well, if the block size is anything significant, the second version is likely to do a lot better. So that's how we could have sort of, that's how we could have used our locality ideas to like estimate the number of misses and say, oh, this second version is likely to do better. So next time, which will be next Thursday, as of election, no, not, am I remembering weeks correctly? No, it will be next Tuesday because election day is the week after. Time, we'll talk about sort of things where we can look at this list estimation and come up with things that are better than just changing the order of these loops.